everybody.
Yeah.
Here we are once again.
Let's see who's here.
Our last live stream before the weekend.
Mango's in, Alex is in, Tammy's in.
I can't believe you guys come by every day to like watch Oracle. Us yapping.
Yeah.
That's Sophie's so touching.
Or I'm gonna call her Benji. Benji's in.
That's not nice.
She's at her hair appointment.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
She wanted to stop into the chat.
She can't listen. She's just talking. All right.
Now, I did see that Mango said, because today we're talking about the Mike Flanagan. He didn't direct the entire series, but I'll get into that in a little bit. But he's the showrunner on it. The follow-up to the much-lauded Haunting of Hill House. This is The Haunting of Bly Manor, which just dropped on Netflix. And I finally got to the end of it last night. I was, like, binging all the episodes going, I want to watch that. I want to, like, review this tomorrow. So it's like, you know, because a bunch of people will ask me about it. Now, I don't. Because I know that Mango just said that you haven't watched it yet, but you want to watch it. So it's like, I'm not gonna spoil any of the big reveals. But, I mean, I might say some shit that is not necessarily, I don't know. It's not necessarily, like, meant to be spoilery. But I'm just saying that if you really, really want to watch this series without really knowing anything about it, then maybe you might not want to watch. So just in case I accidentally say something that, like, ruins some shit for you. I don't know what that's going to be.
It's a nicely made series, but I really didn't give a shit about it.
Well, you weren't even watching it, and it was one that, like, you really have to, I mean, much like The Haunting of Hill House, it was one where you really had to, like, pay attention to background details and pay attention to, like, conversations and stuff like that, because everything, like, meant something and, like, tied into something else. So I will say that Haunting of Hill House, which I've watched through two times, was, I think I liked that a little bit better, but maybe only just because Haunting of Hill House was, like, scarier than this one. Like, this one is still, like, has some creepy shit in it. It has, like, some creepy imagery. But this one is more like a gothic romance than a straight-up ghost story. But it has, like, horror elements in it. So kind of know that going in. Also, even though it is ostensibly based on The Turn of the Screw, and the first couple of episodes are very much like an adaptation. Not even so much an adaptation of The Turn of the Screw, as I think it's more an adaptation of The Innocents, you know, which was also an adaptation of Turn of the Screw. But there's some stuff in here that's more an homage to The Innocents than to the original story, like the statue garden and stuff like that. And the song that Flora sings, like that was from the movie and not from the original story. But I will say, too, that this, and even at the beginning, like in the opening credits, it even says, it doesn't say based on Turn of the Screw, it says based on the works of Henry James. So there is a whole bunch of Henry James stories in here that are referenced and straight up adapted and that are kind of like tied into the ongoing narrative, which is largely based on Turn of the Screw. So you got like one episode that is basically straight up based on The Jolly Corner, which is another story that he wrote. You have one that's sort of that is almost a straight up remake of a story that he wrote called A Romance of Certain Old Clothes or something like that. That's like a kind of a flashback sort of episode. So that's like a straight up adaptation of that story. There's also references to one of his novellas, which is called The Beast in the Jungle. There's not like an adaptation of that per se, but the theme of that is like a recurring theme of the show. You know what I mean? So there's like a ton of like other references to Henry James' work in this. So it's not just a Turn of the Screw adaptation. It's kind of like ties into a bunch of his, you know, different stories as well. I will say too that the part of it that is based on Turn of the Screw is a much closer adaptation to Turn of the Screw than Haunting of Hill House was to the Shirley Jackson novel. Because, I mean, that one, as much as I, you know, I really liked The Haunting of Hill House, you know, the show, but it wasn't really a straight adaptation of the Shirley Jackson novel by any stretch of the imagination. It just kind of, like, took a couple of things from it and then, like, kind of expanded out into its own story, which was cool. You know, I liked that. So the one thing about this that's kind of different than the first season, because like I said, this is kind of like American Horror Story, if you don't know, in the sense that, each season is going to be like its own standalone story, but it's going to have like a lot of recurring actors and maybe some recurring like thematic elements. So one thing, like there's a bunch of the same actors in this that were in Haunting of Hill House. They're just playing completely different roles. Also, I noticed the score was the same, which I thought was very interesting. I thought that was like an interesting thing that they did. And some of the thematic stuff is the same. Although I feel like this one is kind of more concerned. Like, I feel like the first one was more worried about the Crane family, like all the siblings, and how like growing up in Hill House had like screwed up their lives like in various ways, and how and how that kind of impacted their life later on. Whereas I feel like this one is kind of has a little bit of the same themes, but it also kind of had a thing where this one was much more like a love story, and one that was not just between two particular characters, but between several characters, and also something about memory and living your life, not worrying about like when you're going to die or being afraid to love someone because you're afraid you're going to lose them, things like that. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff in there too, and that like several of the stories kind of tie back to that central theme about memory and about like people forgetting about you and about things like that. So, which was kind of referenced a little bit in Hill House, like with I think like Nell's speech about like memories being like confetti and stuff like that. So there's a little bit of that going on in this too, but it's kind of a different focus. So it was it's 9 episodes, and basically the story is that, I mean, it's been modernized. It's set in, well, the main part of the narrative is set in 1987. You have a nanny, she's a school teacher named Danielle, whose last name is actually Clayton, which is a reference to Jack Clayton, the guy who directed The Innocents. So like I said, there's a whole bunch of little Easter eggs in there like that. And she goes to England to escape some, at first you don't know, like some kind of trauma that she's happened in her past because she's like running away. So she goes to England and takes a job as a nanny for these two creepy kids, Flora and Miles. They're not like, they're not overtly creepy, but I think that's like one of the best things about the show is that the kid actors in this are great. The little girl that plays Flora, fun fact, she's also the voice of Peppa Pig, which I didn't know until I looked at it.
What is Peppa Pig?
It's a like a little animated kids show.
Okay.
That's like a little British kids show about a little pig named Peppa.
But she's cute.
She is cute as a button. Yeah. So, like, her and the kid that plays Miles are really, really good in this because they have a lot of weird shit they got to do. So it's like, I like that they're kind of like, the way that they're creepy is not like straight up, like, oh no, creepy kid. But just some of the shit they do is just like really weird and like behaviorally, you're like, what the fuck is going on with that? So it's like, you know, like I said, not so overtly creepy, but you don't know what's going on. So it's like intriguing, like, what is this deal? Why are these kids acting like that? Why are they saying that kind of shit? And this is another one, too. I think the interesting thing about this show is that, like I said, overall, I think I liked The Haunting of Hill House a little bit better, but maybe only because it was like creepier or scarier. This one a little less scary, but I noticed that when I finished this one, and I haven't watched it a second time yet, which I'm sure it will benefit from because there's like a whole bunch of shit in there that I missed, evidently. But after I finished this one, I felt a lot more compelled to like go and read other people's like summations of them and like theories and things like that, which I didn't feel I had to do as much, you know what I mean, with Haunting of Hill House. I feel like this, because it had so many more, because it was just not concerned about one family story. It was kind of like all these different people, but they all had the same thematic shit going on, but it kind of all like had to do with this house. So I think there was like a bunch of shit in there that I missed. Now, if you don't know, like, because one of the best things like a lot of people liked about Haunting of Hill House was all the ghosts in the background that like they kind of didn't, you know, it wasn't a kind of thing like boo ghost or anything like that. They always kind of put shit in the background. It was like really subtle. They do this a lot in this one too, but the cool thing about this one is that all the ghosts in the background, spoiler alert, they do actually like come into play in the story later on, or it's explained like who they are, or they're mentioned or something like that. So they're not just there like to be creepy or anything. They actually do like have a little bit of bearing in the story. And I think most of them's backstory is at least referred to at some point. So they're not just there for atmosphere. They do actually have to tie in with, like, the history of the house and everything. So, like I said, there's, you know, there's just kind of, like, so much going on in this that really the first couple episodes, like I said, are kind of, I don't want to say it's a straight-up adaptation of Turn of the Screw because it's not, but that's kind of, like, where the bulk of the story comes from. But then after that, it starts going off in different directions. I think probably my favorite episode, even though it took me the longest to get into because I was like, what the fuck was going on? I think it was the fifth one. It was the one where the housekeeper, Mrs. Gross, who her and the guy that plays Owen, the cook, they were like the best. I loved those two characters. I think they were like the best characters. Them and the kids were like the best characters in the whole series. But the one where she was like going through that weird like time loop and they were like showing all this stuff, like memories that she had and everything. And like I said, I can't say too much about it because that'll be a spoiler. But that episode, I think, was really good. And also, I think the second to last one was probably my favorite one as well. But like I said, this is one, just like A Haunting of Hill House, you really, really, really have to watch this one twice. Because when I was reading through a bunch of, like, I've even missed, like, a lot of fucking ghosts, man. Like, some people even said, like, in the first episode, they were like, oh yeah, that like there was this plague doctor and he was like in the background. It's just like, dude, I did not even see that a single fucking time. So I wasn't even paying attention, obviously. But that does come into play later on. But everything in it ties back to something else and it all gets resolved. Now, one thing I will say, some people have been criticizing Carla Gugino, who is in this, who's obviously like in a lot of Mike Flanagan's other stuff. She had to have like a sort of a Yorkshire accent in this, and it's not entirely successful. I mean, it didn't bother me that much, but I was just kind of like a little bit of it was just kind of like weird. And then like, I've seen some people from the UK online being like, oh my God, it was terrible. You know what I mean? So it's like, So I don't know. Like, British people might watch it and they don't know. I knew that it wasn't. I mean, I know she's American and I know she doesn't talk like that. But so I could tell that it was a little bit, it wasn't too bad. Henry Thomas, who plays Henry Wingrave, his accent was also a little hit or miss, but not too distracting, nothing like that. So some people, I'm just saying, some people would criticize that. One thing that I thought was very funny, and this is something that I never thought of before, but I've seen some British people say, what is it with Americans making, like, you know, horror movies or ghost stories or something that are set in England, and it's like you go out at night and there's like crickets. They're like, we don't have that. It's like, it's not, they're like
crickets?
They're like, yeah, but it's like, it's not like, they're like, it's not the Everglades. It's like, yeah. It doesn't sound like that outside. So they're like, every time that happens, they're like, oh, an American must have made this. Yeah. Because it's like, they're,
it's,
like, you go
nighttime sound.
Yeah, like you go outside at night in Britain and it's like you don't hear like brr, 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 like, well, crickets funny. All the time. But it's that, like, shit, I never even thought of that.
You know, you never find American actors that can do in British accents for the most part. I think it's because, you know, our actors get hired based on that casting couch and Coke. All right. But that dude from fucking The Walking Dead, that dude sounded like a Southern dude.
Andy Lincoln.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except every
my
now
dad
and
was
then,
shocked.
Like,
my dad
I
was
actually
shocked.
Didn't realize that he was British. Because I know
did you
he,
know that guy? Did you know, he was British?
I know he was in Love Actually like, before that, but I hadn't seen that movie, so it's like...
Yeah, no. my dad's fucking hardcore Southerner and Mississippi as fuck. And he thought that was a real thing. He goes, yeah, that's right. We're being represented. It turns out that was a British dude. Oh, yeah.
God damn it.
God damn. Sounded just like a Southerner.
Lauren Cohan, who played Maggie, she's British too.
Yeah. She's pretty good. That sounded Southern. Yeah. There's a lot of variation in the Southern
That's true. And the thing about when you do like a British accent, that I'm like, which British accent are you talking about? There are so many.
Right.
I
could tell what area of Mississippi you're from based on your fucking accent.
Well, that's what I mean. And people from the UK are the same. They're like, they can pretty much tell what town you're from by how you talk. And I saw somebody like comment that earlier. It's like, that's what happens when you have for 1,000 years, people that didn't go any farther than 20 miles from their hometown for like a long time, it's like everybody's going to sound the same and you're going to know exactly where they come from.
Yeah.
So,
all
you know,
the descendants of all the sharecroppers all sound exactly the same, pretty much. And a good example would be the Hodge twins. The Hodge twins sound like every Southern sharecropping family. No matter what their race is, they all sound like that.
Yeah.
That's the way my dad sounds. All his friends sound just like that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know those were black guys if I just heard them talking.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just funny. But that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think so. Like I said, it wasn't too distracting for me as an American. Some people have said that the guy that played Peter Quint, I can't remember his name. He was the same guy that played Luke in Haunting of Hill House, which is funny because when he played Luke in Haunting of Hill House, it didn't occur to me that he was not American. However, he is not. So when he was doing an accent in this one, I was like, wow, that's like a pretty decent Scottish accent. He's not Scottish, but he is English. Yeah. So because he played an American in Haunting of Hill House, and it didn't occur to me that he wasn't American, I guess, because I hadn't seen him in anything else. So, because I don't see a lot of TV. Apparently, he's been in a shit ton of other stuff as well. Also, I really liked that I saw Alex Esso in this. She wasn't in it very much because she played Flora and Miles' mom, Charlotte, who, you know, obviously at the beginning of the story is dead, but she's like, you know, they show her in flashbacks and shit. And I, you know, she did a pretty passable English accent too, I thought. I first saw her in Starry Eyes, like back in 2014, which I loved, which was a great fucking movie. And she also played Wendy in Dr. Sleep, which was another Mike Flanagan. Because Mike Flanagan, I don't know if you know, Tom, but Dr. Sleep was directed by Mike Flanagan, who was the same guy that did this and okay. Haunting of Hill House. Now, on
I like Dr. Sleep better.
Now, on this is like... He, I guess, like, the first, like, Haunting of Hill House, I think he directed the whole thing. This one, he only directed the first episode, which is called A Great Good Place, and then the rest of them, he was just, like, the showrunner, so he just, like, oversaw the whole story and, like, just kind of, and then it was, like, a handful of other directors that worked on it. But it seemed like everybody did a pretty good job of kind of matching his style, because it didn't occur to me that other people had directed it, like it wasn't a weird tonal shift or anything. Just as in the first one, the fucking production design, the set design, beautiful. The house is just gorgeous, like the whole theme of it, like all the outside with all the mist and everything like that was super cool. It just like looked really cool. The ghosts were really cool, like the one lady or the lady of the lake or whatever they call her, you know, without the face and shit like that, because they showed that on the poster, were also really cool. But, you know, like, I think another criticism that people might have, I didn't mind this at all, but it did seem like they kind of left... They did really good opening, like, with all these kind of mysteries. Like, what's up with these fucking weird kids? And what the hell's going on with this house? And what happened to their parents? And what's the deal with this, like, creepy-ass dude that's, like... that you can see in mirrors that has like these big like fucking shiny fiery eyes and like that follows Danielle around. It's like, what the hell is that all about? So they did that, and then like, but then like in the middle, it seems like it took a long time for some of that shit to get resolved. You know what I'm saying? So it's like it was kind of like, you know, they set all these mysteries up, and then they just kind of like, instead of revealing them slowly over the thing, it, you know, it was like the fifth or sixth episode before you like found out any big like revelations or anything. So because they kind of spent a lot of time in there setting shit up. But I will say that 99% of the mysteries that were set up do get solved like by the end of it. It's from like episode five on. The only one that didn't get said, I'm not really going to spoil it because I don't really want to, but there was one mystery. It wasn't like central to the whole story or anything, but there was one that I don't think was ever resolved, or they never really like explained. But you know, it wasn't a big major thing. It was just one thing that I was like, oh, hey, they brought that up once and then they didn't like follow up on it, or they didn't like say what actually happened there. So that's going to be the only thing that I'm going to bother, but it's like, because 99% of the shit that they said and that they set up and everything like that, like, totally came to fruition at the end. So, like I said, this one is, I mean, Haunting of Hill House was, like, scary, but it was also, like, really sad. This one, less scary, but way more sad. I mean, this one, I think, was really sad. You know what I mean? You know, I wasn't, like, bawling at the end, like, or anything like that, but it's, like, it does kind of, like, a lot of shit happens. It's kind of like a bummer. It's like, not a bummer, but it's like bittersweet. You know what I mean? But, you know, your mileage may vary. I don't know. I feel like people are not liking it as much as Haunting of Hill House, which, like I said, I can see that because it's not as creepy, but I think it has, I liked the story a lot more, and I think it had like a lot more kind of emotional shit going on. And I liked that instead of just following one family, it was just like a bunch of different relationships, but they were all like thematically related. And I really like the idea of essentially making an extended universe with like a classic ghost story writer. You know what I mean? In this case, Henry James. So I thought that was like a really cool idea, like taking a bunch of his stories and kind of like adapting them into one larger narrative. You know, I thought that was like a really cool idea, and I'm kind of surprised that that's not done more often. I guess he kind of did that a little bit with Haunting of Hill House, but I feel like there wasn't a lot of other stuff in there that related to other Shirley Jackson stuff. But this one very clearly, I mean, one episode was pretty much a straight up, was a straight up adaptation of the romance of whatever was the romance of old clothes or whatever it was called, was pretty much a straight up adaptation of that ghost story. And one was also kind of like a riff on The Jolly Corner, which is one of his better known stories as well. So if that sounds like something you'd be into, definitely just rife with Easter eggs, particularly if you're into like classic literature, classic ghost story type of shit. So yeah. And hopefully I didn't spoil anything too much for anybody, but Tammy said, I felt sorry for some of the characters I didn't think I liked when they were first introduced. I think they did a good job, I'm gonna say particularly Peter Quint's character, of making him not necessarily sympathetic, because he is a bad guy, I mean he is a villain, but making his motivations like understandable, you know what I mean? So I really, really like that they were able to do that. And I honestly, I liked pretty much all the characters. Like I said, I think Mrs. Gross and Owen were my favorite. Thank you, Mango. Convince me to watch it, Flashbulb. You might like it, you might not. Like I said, now I have seen some people saying, oh, it's not as good as Haunting of Hill House. And it's like, you know, it's not scary enough. It's not, you know, it's too much of a romance and too much of a blah, blah, blah. But I mean, it is like a very... It's a pretty standard, if you know anything about Gothic literature, it's a pretty standard Gothic, you know, literature kind of adaptation, but just without, like, the overt scariness of, like, Haunting of Hill House, I guess. Like, it's a more subtle scariness. But when you get to the end, there's, you know, there's a lot of ghost shit going on there, too. And the shit with Danny and, like, the ghosts or whatever that is that's following her around, that's kind of, like, your scares at the beginning part, and then that kind of goes on and then it goes into a different story.
For so, me, know. It just didn't pull me in. Didn't really kind of have that. It didn't have the driving kind of storyline and behind it. Like you said, it's old Gothic horror.
Yeah.
It feels Victorian. The thinking behind it feels Victorian.
Yeah.
Which is not real, you know what I mean? How should I say? It's not real fucking high energy to me. It's slow burn stuff.
It's slow burn, and it is very, like, T-Law says, some are saying this playing out like a soap opera, more drama than scares.
Yeah, that is fair. I
would
say it's kind of, I don't want to call it a chick flick. It's not really a chick flick.
No, not really.
But it has, I think these kind of stories appeal more to the female personality. I just think they do.
Yeah, as I would.
They're not as hands-on, the story. It's all inner psychology and... It's the inner world of thinking and worrying about stuff. You know what I mean? It's you're dealing with a problem that you can't really fucking get a good grip on. There's nothing you can physically do about it.
Well, yeah, because it's like supernatural.
And for some reason, women like those stories more than guys. Guys, I think because guys get frustrated too much by a situation like that.
Well, we like more complicated things.
Yeah, and be like, well, I can't fucking punch it. I'd punch the shit out of that shit. Where is this fucking ghost? I'm going to kick that ghost's ass. You know what I mean? And you can't do
Tom
that.
Tom only likes stuff that you can punch.
I'm going to punch that shit. And you can't punch it. So you don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about that shit. Can't kick its ass.
You know what?
Can't kick its ass. There's nothing you can do.
You know what that made me think of? Like you saying that? That made me think of that episode of A Haunting.
Yeah.
That Ed Dunham was on.
Ed Dunham. I know Ed Dunham.
Yeah, he does too, because he lives around here.
He lives around here, yeah. Ed was an ex-Army Ranger, and he had a fucking house.
And it just like made him mad that a house was on it, and he couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah, he kept seeing the apparition of a dude in a fucking house.
I just want to beat it up.
Saw a dude in a house fucking smoking a cigar, and he goes, what are you doing in here? And he fucking attacked that fucking thing. And then he kept hearing footsteps up on the roof. Never could see anything. And he challenged the fucking, challenge it to fucking fight. And
yeah,
ghosts, you can't fight a ghost. And he got pissed.
But that's what makes them scarier, in my opinion. Yeah, I mean, and what they have to do.
Drove him nuts, though.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I can see that. I can see being frustrated by problems that aren't, like, easily solved or aren't solved with, like, you know, physical means.
Yeah, that episode, if you want to see it, it was, like, season one or two of The Haunting, and it was called A Haunting in Florida.
Yeah, I think
And that happened right up this road here in Deltona. I've been to that house. I've seen that house.
Yeah, we did it. Yeah, we did it. And we also did a show on
And I know Ed Dunham. He's on my friends list. He's doing shit around here now. He was marrying people for a while as if he was a minister.
How many?
He became a damn army minister.
I thought you meant he was married, but I'm like, you just marry people left and right and then divorce them.
He put on a kilt and shit. Put on his fucking he'd put on a fucking tartan and fucking put you in front of a big old fucking Army Ranger sign and fucking marry you.
A kilt and Army Ranger. Yeah. Sign. That's all you need.
If you wanted to be married by an Army Ranger, he'd do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had that justice of peace power.
Yeah.
So that's what he was doing.
Well, shit, you can get that online nowadays. Yeah. You can get that fucking like $5 or $10. Or that's
is that what
he
it
used.
Is?
That but right. It used to be bad.
He'd
back
put on
in
a whole ceremony. He'd give you an army wedding.
Maybe it's more than that now.
He'd give you an army wedding.
That's pretty funny.
That was his thing, yeah.
Yeah, Tammy said, definitely a slow burn, but the ending is worth it. Oh, yeah, it definitely is. And that's kind of one thing, because I was reading, I can't remember what blog it was. Maybe it was AV Club or something like that. They've been doing, like, a episode-by-episode breakdown. So she's reviewing each episode as she's watching it, and so she doesn't know what's going to happen. And apparently I don't know if she's never read Turn of the Screw, but like I said, this goes off in, like, slightly different directions. So even if you've read that, you're not really going to know where it's going. But it's interesting to see, like, the predictions that she made and, like, because me, like, having watched the whole thing, I'm sitting there going, well, no, you're right about that, but you're wrong about that and all this other kind of stuff. So I can see how people might get frustrated because they feel like, you know, oh, the first couple, like, the first episode or two were, like, really good, and you, like, introduce all these mysteries, and then, like, for a couple episodes, it seems like it's not progressing on that, or it's not, like, working on those mysteries, but like I said, if you watch the whole thing through, it, like, really solves pretty much 99% of the shit that you were asking about, and it really does kind of, like, tie everything up really well at the end, I thought, but you really have to, like, you know, I've seen this called, this is a very patient, you have to be very, like, very patient with it. And like I said, this is another one that is definitely going to be, like, better on rewatch, just like Haunting of Hill House was, because now you know the resolution, so now you can see, like, everything that was set up, like, knowing what's going to happen in the end.
Talking about this, and talking about Ed Dunham, and fuck, it makes me want to see Ghost Brothers again. I wonder if that show's still on.
Yeah, I was just wondering about that the other day, if that show was still on.
Does anybody know if Ghost Brothers is still on? That shit was fucking funny.
We only saw about
6-7 episodes, I
Yeah,
think.
We didn't see that many of them, but I just caught it on TV every now and then.
Yeah, Ghost Brothers.
I just, like, I didn't even care about the ghost shit. I just thought they
were fucking hilarious.
I just thought they were funny, and I was like, they don't have to go explore haunted shit. They could just, like, hang out and talk.
They'd get scared of shit.
It would be funny.
He's like, oh, no, I can't take this. Oh, no, I can't take this. That's funny.
Ken says, how's the cookbook coming along? We actually, I have a couple other projects I have to finish first. Like I said, I've got all the shit done, but, like, in 2 weeks, I want to, like, get in there and, like, finish it.
Right.
Because, like I said, I got all the page layouts done. We just have to
go through it and get the delivery right.
I just have to go through and get the delivery right and, like, you know, get the pictures put in and shit.
Yeah,
like that.
It's not like you start at the beginning and start writing shit. It's not really like that. It's, you got to get all the information.
Yeah,
you gotta
it's going to be
it,
like,
and then you
got to
flesh it out, and then you got to kind of humanize it.
Yeah.
And you know, I got to get in there and fucking.
So we are still working on it. I'm still shooting for getting it done by Christmas. We'll see how it goes. Because we still have a couple weeks.
May or may not happen. It'll probably happen.
It'll probably happen. Because, right. I mean, like I said, because I've got a couple things I wanted to finish by Halloween, which I'm on track to finish.
You got
by
the
that,
vegan
then,
cookbook?
It's up there.
Why don't you grab that and show them
why
what we're talking
get
about?
Get it.
Right? We're not talking about a cheap cookbook. This shit's going to look cool.
Well, yeah, I think it's going to look cool. It's up there. It's right there. Satanic Spellbook. Yeah, that's it. Your finger's right there. Yeah,
okay,
yeah. It's right there. Right there. Right next to the Edward Gorey book. Yeah,
hardcover.
Yeah, we probably showed this before. This is a vegan black metal chef who is a friend of ours, and this is his cookbook, which I designed. He wrote it, obviously, and took all the photos, but yeah. I'm the one that designed it. But yeah, so he has like all this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
like,
it's gonna be something along this
line. I'm going the wrong way.
Yeah, and you know.
Yeah, it's gonna not gonna look exactly like that, obviously, because that's kind of his aesthetic.
Yeah, this, but it's gonna be. We're just talking about the quality.
Yeah.
It's gonna be real high quality.
Yeah, I'm definitely doing a hardback because paperbacks for a cookbook. I don't know. I just always feel like cookbooks should be. I mean, the Gordon Ramsay one is paperback, and that's fine. But
probably each section, you know, as they have themes, will visually have a certain theme too.
That's what I'm thinking of doing. Because yeah. I kind of did this one. What I did with this one was I just like, because he kind of had this broken up into different like cuisines. Like this is the Indian cuisine, this is Italian or whatever. And I just made them like slightly different, like different colors. So you'd be able to kind of like flip through and see like, right. You know, get to the one that you wanted to get to. But, you know, so I'm not really sure. That's probably how we'll organize ours as well. I don't know. We'll see. Because some of the stuff that we want to do, like, is there's crossover with other shit. And I don't know. And like you said, you wanted to do some shit with...
we're going to do some Mexican food in there, too.
Probably. Well, yeah. We're going to do Mexican food. Yeah. You can do Indian food. Maybe Thai food. Chinese food. Southern American food. Yeah. Like your biscuits and gravy and all that other kind of stuff.
Yeah,
we got to do all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, like I said, we've got the list done out of all the recipes we're going to do. And I've got like the, all the page templates, like all set up, like how I'm going to like lay everything out. Like once we get all the text finalized. So as I said, hopefully have it done by Christmas. We'll see how it goes. And it is going to be hardback. So, yeah. Like I said, if you're looking for something, like, fucking that'll, like, scare the shit out of you, this is not that. But if you're into, like, classic horror, gothic horror, or something like that, then you should definitely give this a watch, because I think you'll appreciate it more, like, after it's over. And then, because now that it's over, and, like, I know what happened, and I'm just like, oh, shit, now I gotta go back and watch it again, because, like... because I missed a bunch of shit. Pretty much everything in there, like, ties together. You know what I mean? Or, like, refers back to something else. So it's actually, like, really, really well written. But, yeah, it's on Netflix, obviously. So go binge it and tell me what you thought of it. And do you have anything else you would like to add?
No, I'm good.
All right. So I guess the next live stream we're going to do is our Saturday night show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got to do that.
Yeah.
What?
I was thinking, I forgot what the topic was going to be.
I told you like a minute before we started this last
year. Yeah, I just fucking slipped. It slipped my mind. I'm sleepy right now.
So am I.
Okay.
I woke up at 5:30 this morning. All right,
you'll tell me when you shut it down.
Yeah, I will. I'll tell you
again. You know what it is. You know what it is.
Well, yeah, I hope so. I obviously have to know what it is, because I'm the one that has to do all the research.
You know what it is.
And I'm the one that has to set up all the Patreon polls and all that other kind of stuff.
She's a crybaby. She's a crybaby. You're the one that keeps all the money.
Well, yeah. Well, no, because I buy you shit and stuff like that.
It just goes all around.
That's
money is money.
It and I don't like buy anything fun with it. I just pay bills with it. You know what I mean?
Money's money.
Yeah, money's money. Tom's getting old, forgetting everything. Says Louie.
It doesn't matter.
And then Oracle says, "Tom, do you need an old man nap?" He probably does. I wish I could nap during the day. I just can't. I can't sleep when it's daylight outside.
I'm suffering from those conditions of low estrogen.
Low estrogen.
Yeah, that's what it's called. You get sleepy. It's hormonal imbalances and shit.
What? Don't you always have low estrogen?
You're trying to get me to talk about fucking hormonology and biology and shit.
Hormonology.
Testosterone aromatizes into estrogen. Okay. You have to have a certain amount of estrogen in your body, the estrogen testosterone ratio. Okay.
Yeah, I know that.
Well, when you start fucking around with your hormones,
like you do,
like I do, I take some certain things that look like testosterone, but they aren't testosterone. So your own body backs off on the production of testosterone because you think you got enough. Okay.
It's like, oh, you got that covered.
You got it. Yeah. The problem is that the testosterone mimickers do not aromatize into estrogen.
Uh-huh.
So it just falls apart. It's fooling the body into thinking that you have
it. So you need more girl juice. Is what
I need
saying.
Girl juice. That's why one day I went in there and says, you got a birth control pill? And you go, yeah, I got one. And I looked at it and I went, that's not estrogen. That's not the right kind.
Yeah, that was a different. I thought they were estrogen ones.
You take a little bit of estrogen and then you'll fucking wake right back up. But you go through cycles. You take the shit for a couple weeks and then you start feeling kind of sleepy and then you come off of it and for a couple weeks you just recover and then you're going on your own hormones and then you fucking replace them. It's hormone replacement therapy.
I mean, girls know all about cycles.
Girls know all about it because it's the same thing. Girls have been fucking with their hormones forever.
Well, and plus
birth control pills.
And plus, like
thing.
I said, we know all about fucking horrible cycles even before you take birth control pills because you're fucking...
Right.
So I've been dealing with that shit since I was like 12 years old.
I just you get up to a certain size, and if you fucking lift and just work out and you work yourself to the bone, it'll take you weeks to heal back up. That's just too long. You know what I mean? You're not going to grow at the right size. So you've got to what I'm taking accelerates healing. You know, and things that are like testosterone always accelerate healing.
Yeah.
So, you know, fucking maybe if I was 14 or 15 years old, yeah, maybe I'd be able to keep up with that workout routine, but I can't keep up with it now. Take too long to heal up.
Yeah.
You know? And then if you go on fucking steroids or fucking straight up hormone replacement therapy where you take an exogenous testosterone, you can bump it up to have like the testosterone level of like 14, 12 year olds, 14, 15 year olds.
You don't need that.
You don't need that. But those fucking
huge... You run around like a lunatic.
Those gigantic fucking huge fucking mass monsters, if you take their blood... If you take a blood sample off of them, they go, God damn, dude, you got 10 times the fucking testosterone count as a 15-year-old
boy. Have you
boy.
Been eating 14-year-old
you've been eating
children?
Boys? What the fuck, man? It's just too much goddamn testosterone. But you see, when you see them dudes, it's not use. That's not drug use. That's drug abuse.
Yeah.
They're taking too much of that shit. That's why they fucking... end up dying fucking early. That shit's real hard on your heart and your liver.
Yep.
You just want enough to just bump you up to so you grow faster than you normally would. It takes about 5 years. And then once you get there, you just maintain that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's that transformation from grasshopper to locust. That's what you're fucking doing, see? Yes, indeed.
Or
yes.
From Bruce Banner to the Hulk.
From Bruce Banner to the fucking Hulk.
Louis says, I need more girl juice belongs on a shirt.
Yeah. Damn.
There's another one. God damn it. I still got to make... My favorite one so far was I say whatever comes out of my mouth. So we definitely need... Yeah. That's going to be a shirt.
See, Mango knows about HRT. The problem about HRT is I want to go on HRT. HRT is hormone replacement therapy. That's what he's talking about. The problem with HRT is that you want to go on... You want to go on HRT as late as possible. Because as soon as you get on fucking testosterone, and you can get prescribed it here in the U.S., as soon as you go on that shit, you won't want to come back off. Because that shit feels good. You're like, oh, yeah.
Until it doesn't.
Well, no. If you keep the level of it right, you can have the testosterone level of a fucking 25 or 30-year-old until you die. They got guys that do it. They're fucking in their 80s that are doing that. And you just feel fucking awesome. You feel like a kid. You know, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to hit that. Yeah, I'm going to hit that, too. Yeah, I'm going to hit that also. And so sometimes you have to put those guys on mood stabilizers to keep them out of trouble.
Well, yeah, because they're just like sexual assault cases waiting to happen.
I'm gonna get that. Well, if he looks good, maybe he could pull it off. But a lot of those guys don't. So they put them on their mood stabilizers.
Everybody be running away from them screaming.
Yeah.
Get away from me, crazy man.
You know, I was just happened to be noticing that booty you got carrying behind you. And I was thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, tell me how that works out.
Yeah, that's
it. Like,
that's
no.
Got the fucking libido of a 14-year-old in the body of an 80-year-old.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Imagine that shit.
That's horrifying.
Yeah.
That's my next horror story right there.
Hormones are a hell of a drug.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
All right. Are we shutting this shit down?
Yeah. So what I was saying was, you don't want to go on HRT until you absolutely have to. and because you won't want to come off of it.
Ken said that was Hornitos replacement tequila.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very fun.
Yeah.
All right. So we will see you guys again live on Saturday. So have a good time tomorrow. Since then, we got a couple taped things going up tomorrow and Friday. So enjoy those in the meantime, and we'll see you later. Bye.